Refugia, a podcast about renewal. Refugia are places of shelter where life endures in times of crisis. From out of these small sanctuaries, life re-emerges and the world is renewed. We're exploring what it means for people of faith to be people of refugia. How can we create safe places of flourishing, micro-countercultures where we gain strength and spiritual capacity to face the challenges ahead? I'm Deborah Reinstra, professor of English at Calvin University, and this is Refugia.
If you take a moment to get your hands dirty and to dig through compost, you see that this is teeming with life. But it's life that is, you know, otherworldly in so many ways, right?
What a great word.
And yet, you know, this is the place where there's dying going on, important dying.
Hi, everyone. Well, we've reached the final episode of this series, and I'm so glad that biologist Dave Cucci agreed to come back and talk to me again. Dave was my first guest, featured in episode one, and he's been a great conversation partner through this whole project. I asked Dave to come back and reflect with me on everything we've learned over the course of the last 12 episodes. So this time, we grapple with the crisis convergence in the world and in the church that has driven us toward this refugia concept in the first place. And we try to gather examples of refugia described by previous guests and think more deeply about what characterizes refugia, how we find them, and maybe how we create them. We ponder again the truth that for renewal to happen, some important dying has to take place. In connection with that, we talk quite a bit about compost. This episode frequently refers to conversations and people featured previously. So if you're coming into the podcast for the first time with this episode, I hope you'll go back and listen to the other episodes when you get a chance. Whether you're new to the podcast or you've been with us the whole time, thanks so much for listening. Today I'm talking with Dave Cucci, my colleague in the biology department at Calvin. Dave was my very first guest for the Refugia podcast, and he is joining me again today so that we can reflect together on the whole series. We've aired 12 episodes over the last few months, so it's time to figure out what we've learned. I guess we could call this a final exam, Dave.
Oh, dear.
Thanks for being here today. I want to thank you again for your enthusiasm for this project and for your inspiring encouragement. I really appreciate your willingness to think about all of this with me, and I'm really eager to hear your reflections as you've dwelt with this idea of refugia over the last 6 months. So maybe we could start with how things went in your global environment and sustainability course.
Yeah, so I had a group of about 27 students in the course. We had the beginning of the semester on the very first day, I gave them a survey. And one of the things that was included in the survey were questions about where did they find meaning in their environment around them? What places stood out to them? Were there specific animals or even plants or so that had meaning in their lives? I was amazed how often water came up in that little survey as places of meaning for people. I guess growing up here in the Great Lakes, as a lot of the students in my class did, that shouldn't be too surprising, but it really spoke to me and then brought to my mind as well the biblical imagery of water and the importance of water in the sacraments and so on. And I thought, yeah, that does seem entirely appropriate. I also included in the survey some questions from the Yale Climate Communications Group, their so-called little sassy survey, and four questions that peg you on the continuum from where are you about global warming? Are you alarmed by this? Or on the other end of the spectrum, are you dismissive of this? And 60% of the class is alarmed. And that's not surprising to me. The title of the course alone is something that would draw people in, to, you know, if you're concerned about that. But I think it also speaks to where today's university students are with respect to this particular issue. And when we talked about the issue in the course, they were flabbergasted how people could be dismissive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems very real to them.
It's very real to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is this the class that you asked to listen to our first episode?
Yes.
And how did they respond to the idea of refugia?
It came up several times again. I had them write at the midway point of the semester a response paper of all of the things that we had talked about so far, and Refugia was part of that. Mm-hmm. I said, so how do you put all that together? How do you think about the pollution issues, the climate issues, and so on and so forth, the population issues? And several of them mentioned that concept of refugia was helpful.
Mm-hmm. In what way? What did it mean to them?
It meant for them a place where they could wrestle with kindred spirits.
Oh.
It meant a place where they didn't have to worry about being judged.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It meant a place where they could try to figure out how to collectively respond to these kinds of things. And so they appreciated that in the classroom mm-hmm. as well.
It's been fascinating to me how quickly people catch on to and respond to this concept.
I know.
It's been wonderful and surprising, and I'm so glad to continue to explore it. So let's think back to the 12 episodes of the mm-hmm. podcast, and I'm very eager to hear what were some moments that stood out to you or flashes of insight that you had listening.
Oh my goodness, where to start? There's so many, and I know that you know you had shared with me as well some of the insights that you had gained, mm-hmm. and I think I resonated with every one of them. Mm-hmm. This is something that can mean so many different things, but when you begin to pull all the threads together, there's so many commonalities. The word humility comes up times.
That seems to be the virtue of the day here.
Yeah.
And so many people mentioned that.
Right. And you think, you know, there's the humility of being gracious to those on the margins, mm-hmm. to the other. Mm-hmm. There's the humility of doing work that really, really matters, but you don't really know where this is going to go.
Oh, yeah. Chronological humility.
Yeah.
Maybe we could call it.
Yeah. And then there's just the humility of, you know, you don't envision this grand triumphal, you know, utopian view.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a, you know, how do we work out the hard work, the hard questions?
Yeah.
How do we work those out in a place that's safe, but yet we're dealing with really unsafe kinds of concepts, questions, issues?
Yeah. Maybe that brings us to this idea of crisis. So mm-hmm. initially when we were thinking about how to define refugia, we established that one of the requirements is that it needs to come out of a time of crisis or some kind of crisis. That's part of the biological history of the term. So these are places where life survives mm-hmm. in a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And as I reviewed the episodes, I was struck by the number of kinds of crisis the conversation partners talked about. So, of course, there's a climate crisis. Several talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. politics seems to be in crisis. We had a couple examples of that. Hillary Scolton made clear the urgency of repairing current U.S. immigration policies. Christina mm-hmm. Edmondson spoke eloquently of how politics in the U.S. these days can seem very traumatizing and toxic, especially to marginalized groups.
Right.
And then the church seems to be in crisis. So I've been thinking about this weird crisis convergence. And I wonder if you're feeling that too, and if maybe this whole business of humility is a way of looking at this crisis convergence and recognizing how large it is and how small we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I see, you know, all you have to do is open up your browser and read the news.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one crisis after another. You know, at the time of our speaking today, you know, the crisis in Hong Kong has been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And what seems like, you know, this building to, you know, what looks to be a horrific conclusion, you know, of perhaps even people's lives at stake. And you feel, you know, all of the unrest that's happening worldwide. It's not just here. It's not just us. It seems like humanity is feeling this moment of crisis. Mm-hmm. And a lot more talk, not just by, people who tend to talk about end times, but more and more mainstream people talking about, is this the beginning of the end?
I've heard more than one young person say, well, in 10 years, if we're even here in 10 years.
Right.
And it's not the way we talked.
That was not in our vocabulary.
And we're not that old, Dave.
No. Although one thing that it was in our vocabulary regarding the end, we thought that we were maybe not going to see the year 2000 because, the big one would go off.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Right? The,
although that
the nuclear
was
war.
More. I must be younger than you.
But. Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, but I think as we feel in so many realms, the ground shift under our feet, maybe it's a time where humility just seems to be the virtue of choice, the virtue most needed. And that reminds me a little bit of one of the things that has struck me and that I've been thinking about quite a lot over these past weeks as we aired the episodes is the opposition between the Church of Empire and the Church of Refugia. Mm-hmm. And to me, the Church of Empire has this very triumphalistic attitude. Yeah. It's about power. It's about cultural dominance. Yeah. And we have seen the poisons of that in such clear ways. And so when I have posited that opposition to people, they immediately respond to that. And you can tell from the response, this is the time where we shift away from the Church of Empire and move toward the Church of Refugia. And I'm not sure what that means yet. I've been thinking about it. But probably the signal virtue is humility and smallness and a sense that we are not capable of and maybe not meant to be some kind of triumphal conquerors. And that doesn't diminish the power of God.
Right.
It diminishes our power, I think, in ways that are appropriate.
So one of these, funny things that happens every now and then, I had a student email me out of the blue who's taking a different class in philosophy. And he said, this is one of the papers that we read this week. I think you might be interested in this. And it was a paper that is entitled Radical Hope in the Climate Crisis. And this is taking off on a book that was written some years ago about the Crow Nation as they were facing cultural annihilation. Yet the last chief of the Crow Nation at that time, a man named Plenty Coos, was, even as the people were being led to the reservation, he was offering this idea of, okay, how do we won't have our culture anymore.
Yeah.
Our way of life can't exist anymore. So now what? And he was presenting this vision of radical hope to his people. And as I was reading this paper, it struck me that, first, I had to assign this in my class as well. But I also was struck by the idea that, especially as people face the unknown, and the unknown seems so different than anything that we've experienced before, how do we live with that radical hope? And that's where that sense of humility comes in. There's things that we need to learn from our environment to be more in tune with our environment as we face this new reality. But there's also things that, what does an ethics look like within this new framework? The virtue ethics comes up several times in our podcast.
Sure. And Steve Ballmer Prediger is the when we talked about that.
And you think, what kind of virtue ethics do we need for the Anthropocene? What does it mean for us to have humanity to have so much power over things that occur in the natural world? The concept of wilderness doesn't make sense anymore. Everything is touched by human beings.
Yeah, this is Bill McKibben's End of Nature.
Yes, exactly.
25 years ago.
Right. And you think, okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to live an earth-sensitive life?
Yeah.
a virtuous life.
One of the most important people I've read in the last 6 months is Robin Wall Kimmerer and her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. And there's so much to ponder in that book, but it reminds me of what we have talked about too, that the best place to learn about refugia is from the people who've been on the margins,
yes.
the people who have been in some way exiled and
yeah.
apparently hopeless. And Native Americans is a crucial example of that. And reading her and thinking about the way that she presents indigenous ways of living with the earth makes me so skeptical about our typical Christian rehearsal
yeah.
of Genesis 1, and we're made in the image of God, and we are rulers of the earth. And now I just think, are we?
Yeah.
Or are we just disruptors?
Yeah.
I know that's too strong, but
well,
ruler, have we ever ruled anything?
Yeah.
It is, and this is Jamie Skillen, one of his points too, is that we don't know the things we really need to know
right.
if we wanted to be rulers. I mean, the best we can do is strive not to do so much harm
right.
And to strive to know, to continue to try to know how to be healers and restorers and not just destroyers, how to live in harmony. And I think what Robin Wall Kimmerer adds to this so powerfully are the two ideas of gratitude and reciprocity.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. why have Christians missed
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
That is so resonant with our calling as Christians. And she articulates it better than any Christian I've read.
Wow.
So I'm kind of ashamed of that wow. and yet thrilled to have that insight. So maybe we can shift to what are these refugia look like? I think our definition has been quite broad, and we've been groping for what they look like through these podcasts. And so as I read, or as I listened again, I kept an ear out for some features, and I gathered a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
So refugia are welcoming, they're open-bordered, they're humble, as we've said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Work goes on there. That was from something you said, Dave. They're places of capacity building. They're places where one can safely take risks. This sounds like what your students were thinking about.
Yeah.
They are particular and rooted.
Yes.
They are self-replicating. They're places of lament and laughter. They're places of honesty and creativity. They are inclusive. That is, they tend to gather people who maybe in other spots wouldn't necessarily connect. They spread by making connections with other refugia. So that's a really long yeah. list. And I almost wonder, have we lost a concept at all here in this large list? But I wonder what stands out for you in that list.
Yeah, so many things. The welcoming, the inclusiveness, the rootedness, all of those things really strike me
yeah.
as being important pieces of this refugia concept.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Christina Edmondson's metaphor of the table.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, we need to be constantly asking ourselves, you know, who comes to this table?
Mm.
What do we do at this table? You think of a table as being a place, you know, where people talk about things. It's a place where we also share food together.
Yeah.
And I think both of those things are crucial
mm-hmm.
if we are to be people of refugia.
Yeah. I'm thinking of John Whitfleet encouraging us to ask the question about worship. Who's in pain?
Yeah.
Who finds it painful to be here?
Yeah.
Such a difficult question, because we don't necessarily want to face honestly
right.
that we have caused pain, whoever we might be
yeah.
in the context. And I know people, good friends, who've spent their life in the church
yeah.
who right now cannot bear to darken the door
yeah.
of their home churches.
Yeah.
They find it so deeply embedded in the Church of Empire.
Yep.
That's the phrase I would use.
Yep.
They just cannot do it. And so they are finding faith refugia
yeah.
in other places outside the sanctuary space,
yeah.
outside the structured church.
Yeah.
You know, they're not exactly spiritual, but not religious, because right. they would still love to be religious.
Right.
But they're trying to find...
there's no space for them.
Yeah. And in fact, that whole Evolving Faith conference was people who to one degree or another have found the churches they were raised in or knew to be the church of empire in ways that they just cannot take anymore.
Yeah.
And often because they are the ones whom Church of Empire marginalizes or otherwise mm-hmm. continually pounds with messages of unworthiness.
Yep.
And so
heard those.
Yeah. So they are finding other places. It's a time of great ferment in the church in ways that aren't necessarily recognized or measured by Pew Research polls, which are useful and have their place. I saw a really remarkable one even this morning about the number of, it was visual. You could just see the number of people identifying as Christians shrinking across the generations, and the number of unaffiliated, which doesn't necessarily mean people without faith.
Correct.
It means they're unaffiliated.
Correct.
And the number of affiliated just increasing across the generations. So that's just a statistical measure of what we're seeing in so many other instances.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the context in world religions is that Christianity is growing by leaps and bounds in other countries.
Right.
And one of the questions I just wonder and worry about is, well, is that going to be the Church of Empire in another cultural idiom?
Right, right.
Or is this...
And I fear very much, like you do, that that's just going to be a different face, but it's going to be the same empire.
Yeah, which raises the question, I think, what does the American church have to offer, if anything? From what have we learned? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But it is something I wonder about. So this is all lovely and theoretical.
Sure.
But what examples of refugia have you noticed in the last little while that seem to fit these definitions, that seem to be kind of shining examples?
Well, I'll give you one biologically. First of all, compost.
Wonderful. Let's talk about compost.
Compost is a community that doesn't look like anything's happening there,
mm-hmm.
at least if you're just a casual observer. But if you take a moment to get your hands dirty and to dig through compost, you see that this is teeming with life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's life that is, you know, otherworldly in so many ways, right?
What a great word.
And yet, you know, this is the place where there's dying going on, important dying.
Yeah.
Dying to things that can't be anymore. And there's new life just proliferating. You know, there's, you know, statistic is that within a teaspoon of soil, there's more microbes living there than there are people on the planet. Which
is
pretty astounding.
Yeah.
But you know, you think about all of those things going on in compost, and what's the end result of compost? Something that is life-giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that you can put on a plant, and the plant becomes so vibrant because it's taking up nutrients. It's not just taking up nutrients, though. It's also interacting with all of these microbes that have made the compost their home. And the microbes help this whole process of taking up nutrients and water from the soil.
Yeah.
Without them, the plant couldn't do it.
So are we in a cultural moment where we need to compost a lot of things?
I think so.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think there are things that we have to let go of.
Yeah.
Again, going back to this Radical Hope article, mm-hmm. We have to let go of consumerism. We have to let go of the idea that we are masters of our own domains. And I think there's work of, you know, being far more attentive to our contexts. There's a few people who in the series talked about their sense of place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we have to really... cultivate that a lot more, a sense of place. You know, what is it that you appreciate? What draws you in to a particular place? Mm-hmm. What pulls on your heartstrings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking of a conversation with Jeff Chu, a moment in that conversation where he was insisting that, and rightly so, that refugia have to be particular and rooted in a place And we were thinking, yeah, they, it can't be franchised.
Yeah.
There's no formula.
Right.
So it depends on what is needed in the context
right.
where you are and what is also available. And I suppose compost works nicely as an analogy here, too, because you compost what you've got.
Right.
You take the waste products
yeah.
of whatever you
the kitchen
are
scraps.
Doing, whatever
yep.
you are, the kitchen scraps, the yep. kitchen scraps of culture.
Yeah.
And the church. And but as you were saying, it's not only the things you're so willing to give away.
Right.
Sometimes we have to compost things that it's hard to say goodbye to.
Yeah. And I just threw the yeah. last of my tomato vines into the compost.
And they're going to make beautiful dirt
And in the very first podcast, there's mm-hmm. several people mentioned tomatoes. So
that's right. Another theme, humility and tomatoes. I think we found something here. Another question I've been trying to think about, and I don't know the answer yet, is whether we can create them,
mm.
create refugia, that is to say, or whether we just look for them and find them. Do they arise on their own? Do we engineer them? Is it a combination of both? So in my conversation mm-hmm. with Tim Van Deelen, we thought a little bit about wildlife management,
yeah.
or ecosystem management.
Right.
And of course, he was very positive about the idea of, yeah, we have to try to create refugia. And we talked about connecting, finding ways to create corridors
yeah.
and matrices mm-hmm. Of refugia for certain endangered species. So that was very much in the wildlife rather than the metaphorical realm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of, as you mentioned, Christina Edmondson basically creating what we could call a refugium space
mm-hmm.
In her offices here on our campus. Christina also mentioned a leadership program. Kyle Myers Scott mentioned a leadership program that in their own ways turned out to be refugia for people. Jeff's involved in that Evolving Faith conference. He created that Cultivate retreat. I'm thinking also of David Jellema's Lost Valley on the lakeshore, which mm-hmm. is just so delightful to me. So I think we do try to engineer them, but I also think they just arise in certain ways. So is our posture to be busy engineering, or is our posture to be looking? How do you think about that?
That's a great question. You're good at asking those that are pretty hard. That's another theme that comes up in this series is that, well, there's a hard question.
Those are the fun ones.
Yeah, yeah. And as I've been thinking about that question, I do agree with you that there's sort of a both and.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, we can set up conditions and nurture the potentiality.
Mm.
of refugia. I don't know if we can, you know, franchise this. I'm yeah. pretty sure that we can't.
Yeah.
I think that we can be in a posture where refugia are more likely to come into existence and then to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that humility comes back again, of course. You can't go into this with this triumphalistic attitude and say,
yes.
we're going to make a refugium. It's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
But you can say, where are the places where a refugium could make sense,
mm-hmm.
could thrive? There will be sources of stability
mm-hmm.
that will be necessary for nurturing the life-giving forces within this place.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do we protect those? How do we make it possible that those kinds of interactions can become stronger and stronger?
Yeah. I'm thinking of Hillary Scolton's comments about the role of government as creating these kind of baseline conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Government doesn't do the soul work.
Right.
And maybe there's a way to think about that model elsewhere too in the church. And I had a chance to attend the Evolving Faith conference. And one of the key words at the conference was decolonization.
Mm-hmm,
that was a little bit of the buzzword, which is fine.
Yep.
It's a useful word. And it was explored quite extensively in lots of ways, which was very useful. But maybe that's the church and the cultural equivalent of kind of baseline law Mm-hmm. That decolonization, by which is meant a kind of disassembly of power structures that leave people out or that mm-hmm. marginalize or oppress mm-hmm. people. And some of those structures go back in history quite a long ways. So yes. the process of decolonization is like this disassembly. And that process maybe is what can create conditions for refugia to exist
yeah.
For people so that refugia can do what they're meant to do, which is create capacity, retrain places where we can relearn different ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. So in the church, I think John Whipfleet had some good suggestions about worship practices in the church and some very practical approaches to that, where we can start thinking of ourselves not as this dominant cultural force or right. have these triumphalist right. goals. That's God's business.
Right.
But our job is to nurture these little seeds. And if you think about the scriptures, God is always working with remnants.
Yeah.
And little seeds and the most unlikely people, the most unlikely things, the losers and the people without power.
Right.
And I liked what Kate Koyman said, too, that sometimes when new life is forming, it really looks like there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Compost is a great analogy there, too, where it just looks like a pile of trash.
Yeah.
And yet there's this magic, this microbial magic going on that is preparing for new life.
Yeah. And Steve Baum of Prediger talked about, the ark.
Yeah.
Noah's Ark. And then he said, this is really a seedbed to be a blessing yeah. to others.
Yeah.
And I thought, mm-hmm. that's in a nutshell what a refugium should be.
Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here? How do we go out there make refugia, look for them?
I think we look for them in unexpected places. Mm-hmm. We try to find places where people are hurting.
Yeah.
People are feeling that angst of, this world seems to be coming apart. What do I do? Mm-hmm. We look for opportunities that seemingly come out of nowhere to interact, to nurture, to support. Just to listen.
Mm.
And
to be heard and to receive.
Yeah.
I don't want to assume that
right.
we are not people that
no,
need
of
them
course.
Too.
We do. We do.
Yeah.
We definitely do. Mm-hmm. And so, how can we, because this is not individual work.
No.
This is work that needs to be done in community because it is by nature communal work.
And that is another capacity that
yes.
we need to rebuild, at least in the United States. We're so individualistic.
And, exactly.
Yeah. We like to be autonomous. And,
mm-hmm. We think we are. Mm-hmm. but I think, so we look for opportunities to reach out. We look for opportunities to be received. And part of the humility is I don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
And yet there is this idea that somehow if we hold each other, we can get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we have to hang on to. We have to have that radical hope that there is something beyond what we can see.
Yeah. And that's where I think faith has to come in, and we have to recognize that the ways of God are always making use of the little and the nothing and the
yeah.
the unlikely. And if we cooperate with that,
yeah.
life is resilient,
life,
as we've said
yes.
about organic life. Life is very yeah. resilient.
Yeah.
I was struck with Jeff Chu and John Whipfleet and Christina when I asked them, what is your hope for the future? They said, creativity and depth and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Those were their three answers in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
What we need is enormous creativity. John said we can't be afraid of depth.
Yeah.
Depth of pain.
Yes.
Depth of insight. Depth into the scriptures. And we're just going to need a lot of imagination. So it is a crisis in the sense of opportunity as well, I suppose. But it's exciting and terrifying at the same time to be in this place where there's so much letting go and
yeah.
So much
yeah.
need for humility.
And there's pushback against that letting go.
Of course.
You know, there's things that we have grown accustomed to. And so how do I let go of my privilege? How do I let go of my ability to avoid pain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And embrace the pain, but in a very productive way. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
I think it looks like dying and rising.
It does.
That's our deep Christian theme in all of this.
Yeah.
It's the theme that, of course, we are marked by in our identity in baptism. That is, baptism is the mark of dying and rising.
Yeah.
We are the people who die and rise.
We are.
We just have to live into that,
right,
in ways that we haven't.
And I think that's the source of this radical hope, mm-hmm, that, you know, we will rise again. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know what that's going to look like, mm-hmm, but it certainly can't be any worse than we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add? Anything you're still thinking about?
This has been a very, very productive series. It's exciting to see how this concept of refugia is so easy for people to grab onto and say, yes, I think I have a glimpse,
yeah,
of what that might look like. Mm-hmm. And I see an example of that here. And here's a metaphor that really helps me to understand and appreciate this. Mm-hmm. And you know, the relationships that develop within these places become such a key piece. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that too is our central calling, mm-hmm, as Christians, to say, okay, how can we live in communion with each other and with the Lord? Mm-hmm. And do so with more of a focus on, you know, how is this feeling to me,
yeah,
but how is this, how can I minister with you? How can I partner with you? How can I help you help others to meet needs, mm-hmm, to find comfort, to find assurance?
In new ways. New ways of
in
living.
New ways, yes.
Good. Well, Dave, I'm so grateful for your helping me think about this, for your conversation, for your insights. Huge thanks to all my interviewees and to all the people involved in this project, including especially John Huang and our students Lauren Cole, Garrett Sterpko, and Kayla Cooper. Thanks to Calvin University for supporting this through the McGregor Program, the Calvin Center for Christian Scholarship, and through several of our centers and institutes. And finally, we're grateful to you, our listeners. Thank you.
This has been Refugia, a podcast about renewal. Find us on the web at refugiapodcast.com and leave us a comment. Send us your ideas about what refugia means for you. You can also find me, Deborah Reenstra, on Facebook and Twitter at Deborah K. Reenstra.